I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about the time Elvis left the building for the last time. The King's final concert was in Indianapolis on June 26, 1977, 37 years ago today. We're going to talk about that show and about the reasons Elvis Presley lingers as a cultural force nearly 40 years after his death. My guests will be Indianapolis Star columnist Matt Tully, who is writing a book on that last show, and Zach Duncan, the longtime Indianapolis News music critic who reviewed Elvis's last concert. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about Elvis's last concert at Market Square Arena here in Indianapolis on this date in 1977. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, my guests have different viewpoints on this, different perspectives, I guess I should say, because they're viewing it from different ends. Starting with Matt Tully, who is the Indianapolis Star columnist and is an Elvis fan, who is working on a book on that last show. Matt, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here. And my former colleague at the Indianapolis News, longtime Indianapolis News music critic, Zach Duncan, who did the review of that show that provoked some controversy. Zach, welcome to the program.
I'm glad to be here. Still crazy after all these years about Elvis. Yeah.
And I should say, in the interest of full, I actually was at the show, too. I was a much younger version of myself than I am now, one that actually had hair, as I recall. So I'm going to start first, Zach. Well,
were you a fan?
Yeah, I was
a fan. So I'm outnumbered here. I'm not, because I am a fan, too.
Yeah, because you acknowledge that in the review, as I recall. But let's talk to me a little bit about that review and the kind of response you got.
Well, I think we need to back up by going back to my childhood when I really liked Elvis. I mean, I was born at a time when Hound Dog, Don't Be Cruel came out, and I bought all his singles. And so, and this was the first time in all my reviews I had actually got to see Elvis.
Mm-hmm.
So I was as excited as you guys were.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was very disappointed to see what I saw and have to write about it, because I knew This was not going to be a pleasant experience writing about this. And so I wrote what I saw. I thought it was not a very good show. I thought he sort of walked his way through it, pretty lethargic. And that's what I wrote, and that's what they printed. And what was amazing about the review is they put it on page one. And in those days, all the reviews usually were buried in the amusement pages. This was on page one. And so when I saw the paper that day, I thought, oh, no, here we go. And this was before the day of email. So I got letters for months after that review, and pretty scathing. And some of them were, a few were supportive. Mm-hmm. But I just knew that I was in trouble when I wrote the review, but I just had to report what I saw. And I've done that in the past where I'm a huge Beach Boys fan. Mm-hmm. And I've seen some of their shows, the Wilson Brother days, the Beach Boys I liked. And there have been some times when I panned them also, even though I like them. When you're a critic, you just have to report what you see and forget about what you like.
And I imagine the timing didn't help that a month and a half later he died, too, probably touched off a fresh wave of... Because for a while there was a joke that you were the guy who killed Elvis.
Yeah, there was. I think that started in your newsroom where
yeah, we're not a really reverent
Elvis
bunch there.
Read my review, broke his heart, and took his life. So Of course, we all know better than that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and I remember we were talking about this a while ago. I remember hearing the news. I was on on my way back from Cincinnati. I was on an assignment with covering the Cincinnati Bengals camp, and I heard on the radio. And I had to pull off I-74 because it was like it hit me.
Mm-hmm. It hit a lot of people. Now, Matt, how did you get interested in this last concert?
Well, the book? First of all, like, you know, I'm a lifelong Elvis fan. I was 8 years old when he died, and still living in Gary, Indiana, and still give my mom grief that somehow we didn't make it down here for the concert. Back then, you know, getting tickets to a concert was a lot different than it is nowadays. So, but I moved to Indianapolis 12 years ago, and as an Elvis fan, I was intrigued by the local connection. And over the years, it's gone from, you know, something where I thought, hey, it's a cool local, you know, piece of history, to thinking it's actually, if you think about it broader, it's a pretty significant event. You know, I think you could take most great bands and artists, musicians of the last 50 years, and their last concert doesn't matter. You know, they faded away. Some groups, you don't even know when they broke up, or, you know, there are a few, though, where I think their last concert stands for something bigger. Elvis is obviously one of them, the Beatles, especially the way he died a month and a half later. So, you know, just kind of almost underground, I've thought this is something that the city should, you know, be known for a little bit more. There's a nice plaque down there at the site. But I think it's worth looking at and remembering, but also, you know, so much of the story of Elvis can be told through that concert, you know, what was happening to him in his career, but also, you know, and you could say this about a lot of states, but his entire career kind of can be told through his visits to Indiana. You know, he came in the 50s when he was the fifth person billed on the marquee, performed in Indiana, whether it was here or elsewhere in Indiana through the 50s, and disappeared in the 60s, obviously. And then after the comeback in the Vegas years, when he started touring again, starting in 72, he came back here almost every year. And if you look at the reviews, it's really interesting, not just from here, but elsewhere. You see the decline in his health and performances through his Indiana concerts. I mean, the 72, 73 concerts got great reviews. You know, he was still in his prime. And, you know, I have to give it to Zach. I mean, you know, despite being a huge Elvis fan, I think when you look at the role he had to do on that night in June of 1977, when you look at everything we know about the quality of Elvis's health and everything else in 1977, I wasn't there, but Zach probably wrote what is a review that it's principled, he did his job, but also couldn't stand the test of time. Even though those of us, if I was sitting in the audience, and I bet you feel this way, you know, if you're a diehard fan who's lived and breathed Elvis, you probably were happy with what you saw.
Well, it was odd because I was a teenager at the time, and when I went to, well, in my case, some of it was there was so much drama just getting to the show. I think the statute of limitations has long expired, and I can tell this story now. But with my parents' permission, I cut school to go buy the tickets for a lot of people also at my high school, including a couple of teachers, which had some irony to the story. And when I got up there, you know, I went up, and in those days, you couldn't buy tickets online or anything like that. You were, you know, you had to go just stand in line at the site. I thought, if I get there at 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm going to have a pretty good chance here. Well, I got there, and there were at least 2,000 people in front of me already. And most of them, many of them, either were cutting school or, you know, missing work or whatever to be there because it wasn't convenient. And then the TV camera showed up because this was a big deal. People are standing out in the cold, and we're all trying to hide behind each other at that point to avoid being seen on camera to demonstrate it. I get back from finally buying the tickets. I showed up there at 3, and I don't think I got back home, you know, got them bought until like 9:30 or quarter till 10, and got back until 10:30 or 11 in the morning. I get back and the phone is ringing as soon as I walk through the door, and it's my mother saying, you got to go to school because, you know, the school has been calling for you, and somehow they heard you're up there and they're threatening to expel you.
Oh.
So,
a simpler time.
Yes, yes. So, anyhow.
But it was worth it.
It was in retrospect. Now, knowing, so I got to the show, and I guess, my perspective was a little different in that, I think I'd seen some of the photos of him, and I was aware he wasn't 22 any longer, and really that he wasn't even the 35-year-old who'd sort of come back again, and could kind of accept that. Now, I might say, I probably should say, that I was in minority in that audience. I think there was almost like a mass illusion going on there, people convincing themselves that what they were seeing was what he was 10, 20 years before. And I could accept that because I thought he still could sing. And you even, Zach, if I recall correctly, you noted that, when he applied himself, like he did a stunning version of Bridge Over Troubled Water.
Amazing, yeah.
But
even though he had to read the lyrics too,
yeah. But I wonder if a lot of that was almost like a prop.
From what I had heard, they kind of threw. Someone suggested they do that. Someone from the audience, and they kind of like threw it into the set. So maybe he wasn't that quite familiar with it.
Yeah,
it was amazing.
I don't think he'd done it for a while. Has your research shown that he had?
He did it a lot, especially it seems like in that 74-75 period, I believe. But I don't think he did it in the shows leading up to Indianapolis.
So, yeah, and, he was also doing some things like Hurt was one of his showstoppers at the time where he'd do the finale. And that, I thought, okay, that's really the kind of stuff that he's interested in now and not so much, doing the 5 millionth version of Hound Dog, whatever. But, again, I could look up there and say, okay, he's a middle-aged guy and, he's trying to do some things that are a little different.
In your defense, the experience I've had with reviewing shows is that I would say 90% of the people who go to a concert, they're there because they really like that performer to begin with, and they're going to hear a great show. Whether it's not, is or not, they're going to hear the great show.
Yeah.
Especially since they paid. I remember complaining about that. The tickets for Elvis were like $15.
Oh, yeah. That was really high price.
Yeah, because most of the concerts were about $10.
Yeah. Then.
And what's really strange about it is normally the critics would get a free ticket or two to go to review a show. Well, with Elvis's shows, you had to buy a ticket. And the seats weren't very good either, which was kind of, that didn't affect my review at all.
Where were you sitting, do you recall? And Market Square Arena actually wasn't the best venue for a concert either.
Yeah, I was off to the side and probably above the rail.
So, okay.
Yeah.
We are talking about Elvis's last show, which occurred 37 years ago. Today here in Indianapolis on No Limits, if you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, I know in some of the like the Elvis biographies or whatever I've read, people actually say that the last show was maybe the best one on that tour, which says, given that perspective, has that been reflected?
Yeah, everyone that I've read seems to say that. And that last tour is pretty interesting. It seems like he would go on the road for about 10, 12 shows, go home for a while, then go out and do another 10, 12 shows. And that's what he was doing the last at least couple of years of his career. And if you look at the reviews from and what's interesting about Elvis at that period is he wasn't playing Chicago and New York and Los Angeles.
Yeah, they were smaller markets.
Indianapolis was a big market, actually. I mean, South Bend, I think he played shortly before. He played Louisville, he played Sioux City, places like that. But the reviews of that last tour are pretty rough. I mean, words like parody were used, things like that, in a lot of the reviews. And in Cincinnati, 2 days before the show here, I don't know if this got attention at the time or if this came out afterward, but he had kind of a breakdown after the concert and was wandering the streets of Cincinnati. Checked into a hotel, didn't like the air conditioning, so demanded a new hotel. They were calling around trying to find a hotel, and he got frustrated and started walking through downtown Cincinnati. They actually ended up going to the airport, flying back to Memphis. That's why they flew into Indy from Memphis that day, because he was going to come straight from Cincinnati to Indy. But he'd had that kind of breakdown after the Cincinnati show, so they flew back to Graceland, spent the night there, and came back here.
Well, and wasn't this also the tour where he had the kind of weird episode at the gas station in Madison, Wisconsin,
where
he decides he's going to break up a fight, yeah. jumps out of his limo, and
ends up taking pictures with people on both sides of the bike. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of a surreal,
There's a great movie. I think it's called. It might just be called Elvis, but it's about his visit with Nixon.
Oh yeah,
and it just tells a fantastic story of more than just the meeting with Nixon, but you know, he fled Graceland, went to Los Angeles, went back to Washington D.C. It seems like that kind of stuff was happening. That was an extreme version of what happened, but that was kind of happening a lot.
We are talking about Elvis's last concert here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. My guests are Indianapolis Star columnist Matt Tully and longtime Indianapolis News music critic Zach Duncan. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about Elvis's last concert at Market Square Arena here in Indianapolis. It took place on June 26, 1977, exactly 37 years ago tonight. I was there. Zach Duncan, who is the longtime music critic for the Indianapolis News, reviewed it. He's here with us, as is Indianapolis Star columnist Matt Tully, who's doing a book on that last show and the events surrounding it. And, Zach, we talked a little bit before the break about the reaction that you got. You brought some of the letters that you got in response. Could you read some of them? Because it was not... You know, I think we all can agree that it was not a glowing review. It was not the ecstatic one that he probably would have gotten 5 years before.
Yeah, I mean, and you could imagine what, like I said before, if this or had been email, it would have been a lot worse, I'm sure. But some of the letters, I mean, there are a couple that I can't even read. They were so, I guess, perverted. I mean, it was some pretty bad accusations about my personality. But anyway, here's to Dear Mr. Duncan, as for your so-called article, I think it stinks in the first degree. Who in the world do you think you are? If you have such feelings, why not keep them for yourself? Sounds like Bambi, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like that. I'm not sure no one in their right mind is interested in such trash. It sounds to me like you are full of jealousy and take it out on slandering the king.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a lot of that Elvis envy.
Take out the last sentence. I got that email yesterday.
Yeah. I'm sorry you didn't have a good time at the Elvis concert. It seems like you were the only one who didn't. Obviously, you went with a chip on your shoulder and a little jealousy also. Huh? See, there's that Elvis envy thing. Mm-hmm. And then here, on the other hand, here's someone who says, we like to say we agreed with your review of the recent concert because we attended the Neil Diamond concert and also Barry Manilow, and we expected quality work, and they delivered. We were very disappointed in Elvis. He looked good and sounded great. It could have been a very good concert if he wanted to make it, but he just didn't seem to have it in him. He should have stayed home, as you said. Let's see if I can find one more here.
Okay.
Here's another. I have to read the ones that support me. As a rule, I usually don't take time or trouble to write, but after reading your Elvis review, I felt it necessary to give you a pat on the back. I've been an Elvis fan since the 50s, but I've never been so disappointed with him as I am now. So you had kind of a mix. I mean, but I'll have to say 80% was pro-Elvis.
Pro-Elvis, yeah. And was very, very critical of... And how long did that go on?
Longer than I felt comfortable doing. It was probably like 4 months. Four months. Until...
So he died and it was still going. It gave it fresh legs.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. Then the letters I don't have is like, well, see, you know, you, not that I hurt his feelings, but it seems like you were so cruel to him and now he's dead. You should show more respect and all that stuff. But what's ironic, I don't know if it's ironic, but there's a number one Elvis fan in Indianapolis is probably Kay Lips.
Uh-huh.
And Kay approached me because I still had the column, and he approached me about trying to help spread the word about a group in town called Taking Care of Presley, TCP. Mm. And they wanted to erect a plaque and all this stuff at Market Square, and I helped promote that. And so we had this opening, we had this ceremony one night, and I had people coming up to me and saying, no, we apologize. We didn't know you were a fan.
You know,
maybe you were right. Maybe he was a little off. So that kind of made me feel good that people saw then that, you know, I was a fan. I supported him. It was a bad review. That's it.
Yeah. Matt, in terms of what are some of the most surprising things that have come out of the research you've done for the book?
You know, maybe this shouldn't be a surprise, but I've been able to talk to a small number of the folks who were on stage with him that night, Estelle Brown from The Sweet Inspirations and Jerry Sheff, reached out to a couple others. And, you know, a reminder that he backed himself with really high-quality talent, really good musicians, is they have almost no recollection of this concert. And there's a reason for that. One, they did a ton of concerts with him, but the second reason is, as soon as Elvis passed away, their phone was ringing from very high quality entertainers that wanted them in their band. So they moved straight on to working with, you know, Dylan or you name it, Streisand. I mean, they were they moved right on. So it's, you know, you think, boy, you know, they all remember being on the plane flying to Portland because that's what they were doing when they found out that he died. They got diverted, I believe, in somewhere in the Midwest and landed, and that's when they found out. They all remember that, but there's been they have very little recollection of the Indianapolis concert. I think they were just churning through the shows at that point. The other thing is, and who knows, you know, why they're saying what they say, but they seem to be pretty sincere when they tell me that. You know, they knew he was declining, you know, in some ways, but you know, to them, this was a complete shock. Some of the musicians that worked with him and weren't still in the band saw the deterioration more than those who were with him. I think that those that were with him still had the personal contact and didn't see that things were this close.
Yeah, and I'd like to talk about some research, too, with on top of what Matt's saying. I did a piece for Indianapolis Monthly a few years back, and sort of recreating the before, during, and after the concert. And in some of the research that I found, I agree with Matt that the musicians that I talked to, they couldn't remember that much about it. They remember, like you say, being diverted, coming back, you know, it's over with. But one, I'm not sure you'll know who this is. Joe Esposito was like the foreman of the Memphis Mafia. Mm-hmm. He was the guy that was on stage handing Elvis
business
his
manager,
cars,
no,
all that stuff.
No, that was Charlie Hodge.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So what happened was, I mean, he told me when I was talking to him, he said he knew Elvis was in for a tough night because he said he had a tough night the night before, like the Cincinnati deal, and he said he just knew. I mean, Elvis didn't feel good the night before. He didn't feel good that night, and he said he thought it was an amazing concert, considering what he had to go through. And my research, probably the most fascinating person I ended up talking to was a guy named Larry Geller. Mm-hmm. And he's a self-declaimed hairstylist of the stars. Mm-hmm. So he did Elvis's hair. Mm-hmm. And he claims before the concert, he's doing Elvis's hair. Elvis looks in the mirror and he says, I'm a mess. I know I'm a mess. I know what my fans are seeing in me. I'm going to go out and give my best performance tonight, no matter what. You know, this is the best I can do. And then he said, after this tour's over with, we're going to go to Hawaii. I'm going to get on a program. I'm going to clean up. I'm going to come back healthy. Of course, that never happened.
Mm-hmm.
But then also this hairstylist told me that when they were getting ready to go on the tour, he was in the home and getting ready to go upstairs to do Elvis's hair, put some dye on his hair. And the dad, Elvis's dad, what it was, Aaron, I think. So anyway.
Vernon
said, forget about it. Elvis is, you know, he's passed away. We need to go to the mortuary. And this hairstylist says that was it for him. He retired from doing it. So that's the last, Elvis was the last person that he did. So whether that stuff, you know, I can't check those facts, but that's what this guy told me. I thought it was pretty fascinating.
You know, John, the other thing I think I'd point out was, you know, luckily there's some video and audio of that concert.
Yeah.
It's not too bad, actually. And boy, if you listen to songs like "You Gave Me a Mountain," "A Bridge Over Troubled Water," obviously, I think the voice is still very strong. And I've always
a commitment to the performance too,
right? And you know, maybe it's because you know I grew up in the '70s, but I've always appreciated the '70s Elvis more than the '50s or '60s Elvis music. The music that I really really like is the '70s stuff, and it seems like when he was getting to those songs, the voice was still strong. He didn't sing Unchained Melody in India, I believe, but he sang it a couple nights before for the CBS special that was taped.
Yeah.
And boy, if you get a chance to watch that performance, there's great video of it. What you see is a man who's about 6 weeks away from dying. I mean, giving his all. I mean, barely making it through the song. I find it to be by far the most touching performance.
Well, what I find interesting too is obviously the way that the estate, that, you know, Elvis's heirs, have also really worked to keep that part of his career sort of out of the public eye. You know, that last TV special is the one thing you can't get on DVD or video of any kind. They refuse to see it released. I've got to believe that there are some recordings somewhere out there, because they pop up on YouTube or whatever, of not great sound quality of this last show, but it's not available either. So clearly there's some ambivalence about what this last show was and what it meant. And I guess I'd ask both of you, you know, where do you think that comes from? I mean, it's almost 40 years after the fact now. We can sort of accept the fact that yes, I can get the fact he was, you know, he was this huge iconic figure. But there's enough distance now that I think we can see, okay, he was a guy who got on some wrong paths at the end of his life, and that's happened to more than a few people along the way.
You know, if you're in charge of the marketing, if your job is to make money off of Elvis Presley, you know, the 50s Elvis, the 68 Elvis, even some of the really cool images of him in the early 70s, you know, that's where the market is, right? Mm-hmm. Personally, you know, as big of a fan of Elvis as I am, I just find the whole story of his life fascinating. And like you said, we all have ups and downs, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, you know, he had a down. Unfortunately, he didn't get a chance to recover from it. But I don't think – I have never thought that it takes away from, you know, the overall body of work or life that he led. But clearly, folks – one, you might have family members who are, you know, would you want to put photos of, you know, your late parents out on, you know, for the world to see if they looked horrible? Maybe not. But then also, if you're running the business, that's probably not where the business is going to, you know, grow, right?
Yeah, probably. On the other hand, you know, as Zach pointed out, those photos and a description of what happened on the front page of the newspaper.
Right.
So it wasn't like it was really obscure.
Right, yeah. I think what's interesting is, you know, guys like you, you had no idea when you went to the show that night that how significant that concert was going to be. No one had any idea. And now you can say, I mean, you know, that's one of my claims of fame is, like, I saw Elvis's last concert.
Yeah.
You know, and you can say that
a lot
of people.
Yeah, there were, 17,000 of us who could make that claim.
Yeah, can do that.
So, yeah.
You know, whether it's a sad occasion or not, it's sort of like you were really a significant part of history there.
We are talking about Elvis's last concert at Market Square Arena on this date in 1977. My guests are Matt Tully, Indianapolis Star columnist, and Zach Duncan, who is longtime music critic for the Indianapolis News and reviewed that last show. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, I guess where I'd like to go with this now is talking a little bit about, you know, the ongoing, why are people still fascinated by Elvis? I mean, he's still making, what, north of $50 million a year every year since his death. What is it about him that is such a continuing cultural force? Matt, I'll start with you.
Sure. I think it's a number of things. One, I count myself a little bit in this in a different generation, but there are still millions and millions of people whose lives were changed when rock and roll, you know, if you're a kid of the 50s, I mean, you're always going to have that with you. And so that's a big market of people that have a deep personal emotional connection to him. And even though I was a kid of the 70s, I feel like I have a deep personal connection to him. My mom, you know, divorced mom, listened to Elvis to, you know, get her through some tough times. And you know, that always struck me. I think also, you know, and it's hard to say that someone, you know, of his stature is underrated, but I think maybe his catalog of music is underrated and it's such a deep, fantastic catalog of music that, you know, there's a never-ending stream of songs that even fans, good fans, maybe don't know about. They've done a brilliant job, I think, Graceland Industries, if that's what it's called, of marketing him. Yeah. You have the house, which is, you know, just an interesting place to go, which is a pretty unique thing. I can't think of any other entertainer that has something like that. But I think also just there are a few figures in the entertainment world in this country's history who are seen as John, who was a John Lennon, who said before Elvis there was nothing. You know, yeah. pick your yeah. field. There are a few people that represent such a change in society, and he's come to represent that.
So dominate. I remember reading once that, you know, when he hit it big in 1956, you know, that released Heartbreak Hotel that year, he sold one out of every 9 records sold in the world.
Yeah.
And you can't think about any, even though there are huge stars today, anybody whose reach was that across the board. So anyhow.
I'd like to piggyback on what Matt said about rock and roll being born in that era in the mid-50s. And I think it's a generation thing. I think if you're a baby boomer, if you're a boomer and you were – even at my age, a product of the boom, that was an exciting time. And it lasted that was the beginning. And so we grew up and had kids, and I think that generation also followed that. Now, I just wonder if Elvis means that much to people who were born before the baby, you know, who were born and missed all that. Maybe they were from the big band era. That was their teen years, you know. So I just think it's a multiplying thing. You got the boomers and their children, you know, it just kept going. And there's Elvis and the Beatles and maybe Michael Jackson at some point, but those are just huge.
Yeah,
huge
who
performers.
Had that kind of crossover.
No one could do what Elvis did as far as songs and movies and the whole marketing thing. It was just amazing.
We are talking about Elvis's last concert at Market Square Arena on this date in 1977. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Zach, you know, do you think differently about that concert now than you did when you wrote the review?
No, I still haven't changed my mind.
I haven't changed my mind.
It's like that's what happened that night. And unfortunately, you know, that's what had happened. And it sounds like it had been happening all during the tour. So, you know, it's just, you know, I feel badly. I feel disappointed that it wasn't a great show. I would love nothing more than to have written a positive review on that because I know I'd have been a hero. But, you know, that doesn't count.
No, and I guess what I'm saying is, through that, you know, and I've done some reviewing too. You're there, and your job is to be present and really just to kind of, as you said earlier, report what you see. Time gives you some different insights and understandings. I guess what I was saying is not whether you retract the review. That's not where I was going with the question. But to some degree, you know, given that the guy's death was six weeks away, whether you look at it through a different lens now, if there isn't some element of tragedy when you look back on it now.
No, I guess I can't say that I look at it any differently. It was just one of those, it was the moment, you know, I guess I can't say that I could change my mind or change my look at it. I still respect the guy. I still love, Can't Help Falling in Love is one of the greatest love songs of all time, and it's amazing. So I still admire and love Elvis, but the review's still there.
Yeah. And Matt, in terms of it, you know, in your who have you talked to so far in terms of doing the research?
Jerry Sheff, Estelle Brown from the Sweet Inspirations, the folks at Graceland. They won't officially work with you on a book, but they've been very. They have an archivist there who actually my second career, if she ever retires, I'm
is that's where you want to go?
Line. Yeah. If I convince my wife to move down to Memphis, but
good luck.
But
with
that. She's been helpful, and you know, I've been trying to get you know, just real detailed things about the travel and who else was on the plane. Ginger Allen
Alden.
I'm sorry. She's coming out with a book next month, and then she's willing to talk after that. So.
We're talking with Matt Tully and Zach Duncan about Elvis's last concert here on No Limits. I am John Krall. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about Elvis's last concert, which was at Market Square Arena on June 26, 1977, exactly 37 years ago today. My guests are Matt Tully, Indianapolis Star columnist, who's working on a book on that show, and Zach Duncan, who's longtime Indianapolis News music critic, and reviewed the concert, not favorably, as we've pointed out, and got a lot of hate mail in response. If you've got memories of that show, we'd really love to hear your stories. You can call us at 866-476-3881. I'd like to talk about a little bit about how the fact that the death did occur, what was it, 6 or 7 weeks? I was trying to do the calculation here after that show, how that sort of impacted. Because as you say, all of the musicians that Matt's talked to, and Zach, when you did Peace for Indianapolis Monthly, really saw it as another opening, another show. It's, you know, they were there, they hit their marks, they did what they were supposed to do, and they packed up their instruments and got ready to go on to the next show. This one takes on some significance because after that, he did die. And as such, you know, it gets us to look at the show in a different lens, right, Matt?
Absolutely. I mean, when you listen to the performance now, you just think, boy, this is a person who's literally, you know, on the verge of death. I mean, mm-hmm. You're 6 weeks away from dying the way he did. It was a complete breakdown of your body. It wasn't like he was hit by a bus. I mean, this was a guy who was fading away. So even the performance, even the, you know, the reviews that throughout the whole tour that said there were lackluster performances, I think when you kind of think about, boy, who this was at that point in his life, it does make you think more about it, what was going on in his head. You know, the other thing is they'd filmed the two shows for CBS not too long before this show. I think it was within a week.
I think so.
So for all those musicians, that was probably the big deal, right? That's where you had to really be on, you know, not that they weren't always on their game, but, you know, that was one that was going to be shown on broadcast TV, which in 1977 was a very big deal. And they still showed the concert, if I don't know if you remember that, but they still showed the concert. And you mentioned earlier, you know, why are some members of the Elvis team hesitant to put out stuff about this
concert? They fulfilled it. They fulfilled it.
They got a lot of criticism for letting that concert air in October of 77 because of how he looked.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was there some deception involved there, too? I'm trying to remember a story that they did. They try to sell that as Elvis's last concert.
Well, what happened?
It's become known as that.
Okay.
Yeah.
What happened is that that Elvis's father, at the end of the broadcast, came on. He wanted a couple of minutes to thank the fans for all their letters, and he said, "What you've just seen is Elvis's last concert," and in fact, it wasn't.
And if you want to, want to listen to the Indianapolis concert online, you could find it, but you have to be careful because if you Google Elvis's last concert, Elvis's final concert, chances are you'll get the CBS shows, not the Indy show.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
We are talking about Elvis's last show here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. Mary, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, John.
Hi. What's on your mind?
I just have such an interesting perspective, I think, of the Elvis Presley phenomenon. When we were dating, my boyfriend Chuck, who is now my husband Chuck Lofton, was so excited to get tickets to an Elvis Presley concert in Carbondale at Southern Illinois University. He wouldn't even tell me who the artist was. He was so excited. And I was trying to guess Frank Sinatra, the Beatles, Bob Dylan, who is this artist? Found out it was Elvis and was totally disappointed. Went to the concert, and even though I felt that this was a man with a great deal of talent, I think my review would have been like Zach's. It was pretty weak.
And when did you see the show? What, was it in 1977 or was
it? I believe it was 1977.
Okay.
And Chuck and I were both in radio at the time, and I was working at a radio station in DuQuoin, Illinois, the night that the news story broke that Elvis had died.
Mm-hmm.
And it just the teletype machines, the old teletype machines, it just exploded in ding 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 ding. I thought maybe the Pope had passed, and it was Elvis.
Yeah.
And so we had that kind of perspective. But the neat thing about the reason why I think he's still such a big, hairy deal is, first of all, he was really talented, and his story was so phenomenal. I'm monopolizing this conversation. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Thanks very much for the call and for sharing your memory, Mary. We really appreciate it.
Well, thanks
for bringing back the memories of the teletype machines.
That's right, yeah.
Some of us in here are old enough to remember that.
I was going to say the old print dogs here. We get that.
See, Chuck's parents were from the Muscle Shoals, Alabama, Tupelo, Mississippi area. I've been to the Tupelo hardware store. I've been to Elvis's boyhood home. And that was part of the reason why Chuck was so excited, because in the 70s, there wasn't a whole lot to be proud about for Mississippi. But they could really claim Elvis Presley.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Thank you very much for the call, Mary.
Thank you.
Thanks. Well, and that's, there was that aura of kind of disappointment with the show that Mary's referring to, and we'd seen this. I mean, Matt, you've referred to the fact that it's like the reviews get progressively worse every year after 73, right? Is that
well? And I think absolutely. You could see the decline through the reviews. I mean, you know, he had good years 72, 73, 74. Then he had some health issues in that period, but then I think by 75 the reviews were still pretty strong. You know, maybe generous in some cases, but still pretty strong. It was really 76, 77 that you really saw a consistent decline in the reviews. And I thought Zach made a great point earlier. You know, you were at that concert, you know, 17,000 people, probably 16,700 of you or so wanted to see a great show. And your brain will almost force you to see a great show no matter what. Zach was there as an independent observer. In his role, and Mrs. Lofton there wasn't a fan, so he saw it through different eyes, and so it is hard to get an honest take. I have a magazine here from the fan that has a story from 20 years ago from the fan club president from England who met Elvis in Indianapolis before the concert, and he wrote, may or may not be accurate, but he wrote a pretty rough account of meeting Elvis seeming glassy-eyed before the concert and bleeding from his lip and not really knowing who he was and things like that. And looking online, to this day, people still destroy this guy writing this piece in a magazine no one's ever heard of 20-something years ago.
Boy.
You have to wonder if some of those reviews were from critics who were jumping on a guy and kicking him while he's down. And that's one thing I did not want to do. You know, but you kind of wonder, there were some Elvis haters out there. There are critics who are guilty of wanting to, knock down the big guy.
Or debunk, or whatever. Well, and it's been a long time since I've read your review. But as I recall, you acknowledged in it that you, A, were a fan and had been looking forward to the show. And that's in part what produced the disappointment. He acknowledged at points that, when he put himself into a song, it was effective.
Yeah.
But most of the show, he walked through. And I guess where I was, I mean, he did, from my perspective of seeing the show just as a teenager, I think I'd seen enough, or if you'd listened to any of the at that time, concerts that live concerts that they'd released on record, you could tell there were... That was kind of the pattern. He'd walk through a lot of the 50s stuff and only pour his heart into the big ballad numbers, basically. Yeah.
The other thing is, back then, I don't think people went to concerts. It really caught on for a while, but they would pick and choose their concerts. I was going to a concert once or twice a week. So I was comparing it with other productions of shows that would last 2.5 hours or something, and you paid $10 for it instead of $15. Yeah. But so I was going by those productions, and I felt like this was more, it was more of a Vegas show.
Yeah.
And I was more basically a rock concert. I liked arena rock, you know, that kind of stuff. So I'm sure that had some effect, too.
You know, in a lot of ways, too, when you look at the concert, all those concerts the last couple of years, it's a reminder that he learned how to be a rock star in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And so the concerts were still like 50 minutes long. I mean, could you imagine going to a concert and it's 50 minutes long? Yeah. I mean, I saw Huey Lewis in the news 2 weeks ago, and they played an hour and 45 minutes, you know, and at the time Springsteen's coming alive in the mid-70s playing three-hour concerts.
Right.
So it kind of was an outdated style, kind of the same way that I think he struggled once singer-songwriters start really emerged in the 60s. He couldn't get the same good music that he got in the
50s.
I think with concerts, you know, it was walk on stage, do 50 minutes, walk off.
Well, and there was another theme to all of that stuff, too, and it was the, you know, it sounds ludicrous to now, today, where, you know, we've got the Rolling Stones and Paul McCartney, who are in their 70s and are still, you know, seen as powerful forces in music, and no one questions, even though, you know, Jagger, I think, famously said that he didn't want to be, what was it, 30 or 40 and still on a stage singing Satisfaction. You know, there was a huge debate about whether you could even be a rocker north of 40. And there was this idea at that time that 42, which is how old he was when he died, was a really advanced age to be doing this stuff.
Yeah.
And now you got Springsteen, as you say, doing 3.5 hour shows in his 60s.
Well, as a 45-year-old, I have to see reading the coverage of him in the 70s about the fact that he turned 40, and they talk about 40 like
deal.
It was 90. It really, you know, it really was something else.
One step closer to death.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, a sign of how young he was. I mean, all these years later, he'd only be 79. He'd be 79. It is not in any way inconceivable to think that he would still be doing concerts at 79. Willie Nelson's, I think, past 80 and is still doing them.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think it's just because, you know, rock and roll started off as a young man's game anyway. It was for young people by young people. And as these rockers age, just like, aren't you, grow up, you know, quit being a rock and roller. But, you know, Sinatra never quit. I mean, but this is what they do. They're rock and roll people.
Yeah.
And so they're going to perform like Sinatra did his stuff until he was, you know, old enough. And so these guys are doing the same thing. What else would they do? Sell out and start doing Vegas stuff? Probably not.
Yeah, but I sort of remember that, I think, can't remember if it was Time or Newsweek's obit when Elvis died. They referred to him as the Heartbreak Kid. It was supposed to be a play on Heartbreak Hotel and all of that. And the idea that really it was the whole idea of youth itself that was dying here, and that, you know, what was killing him, other than Uzak, was the fact that he could no longer maintain the illusion that he was 22 years old. And, you know, and to some degree, that seemed to me be one of the challenges in sort of looking at him clearly during that period was, he was a 42-year-old guy. Your interests are different at 42 than they are at 22, and that's okay. People, I think, at that point, maybe because he was the first huge rock and roll star, didn't see that there was a map forward from that point, that there was a route. You know, now we think nothing of this, but at that time it was a big deal, because Matt can say, you know, from the research, that was a lot of, you know, the fact that he was north of 40 and all of that was a huge, huge deal at
you know,
the time.
I think if you look at the concerts, it is, we've talked a lot about how he kind of glided through Hound Dog and all those. If you go to most concerts of musicians past a certain age, most people go to hear the hits, right? And you tolerate the things that aren't hits. What was interesting, I thought, at the end there was you kind of tolerated the hits to get to things like You Gave Me a Mountain and you know, these songs that he really poured his heart into. And pretty much everything we know about professionally about Elvis in the 70s, we know through his live performances. There were some albums and some live recordings or some studio recordings. But for the most part, the 70s were about live performances. And at the end, it got pretty rough, I understand. But I think if you really look at a lot of those live performances, they were pretty darn good. And what's interesting is that he clearly wasn't interested in Hound Dog anymore. He clearly wasn't interested in Heartbreak Hotel anymore. He was interested in these songs that maybe tested him, challenged him more, that spoke to him. I mean, he did a lot of social commentary in his latter years. I just find it fascinating, the type of music that was really moving him toward the end, and it's the music I think that has stood the test of time.
I think that's common with a lot of performers now who they really don't want to play the early hits. You know, they want to sing something they really feel like singing, like Elvis was doing. That makes it a lot easier to perform greatly when you really believe in something, you really enjoy doing this, instead of just singing Surf and Safari one more time.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and that is a challenge for any group that's actually got a history or any performer who's got a history. We probably ought to talk a little bit about what Mary was saying on the call, too, which is, you know, the 6 weeks that followed, you know, after that, when literally it's difficult, I think, for people who were not alive at the time to realize the impact of his death. I mean, how literally, and Zach, you were in the newspaper business at the time, what a huge deal that was. It was almost like a president had died.
Oh, yeah. It was like a president had died. And you can imagine the coverage you would have gotten today. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had, like, limited outlets back then. So, I mean, I just think about the technology we have today with all this stuff. And if Elvis had, you know, if he'd say his career had ended 20, 30 years later, there would have been YouTube video of him in concert and mm-hmm. bootleg sounds and all this stuff. Back then, people just had little flash cameras, you know, and there was hardly any kind of recording allowed. I don't think anybody could bring in a little.
Oh, yeah, they were aggressive about that.
Yeah.
In those days, about keeping you.
The Colonel took care of that.
Yeah.
You know what? Speaking of the Colonel, one more thing. What's interesting about Colonel Parker is that he had come into Indianapolis just to kind of check everything out. And I'm trying to think who the guy that was running Market Square Arena at the time told me this, that the Colonel said, I'm going to do something I haven't done before. I'm going to go back to Vegas. Everything looks fine. I'm going to go back to Vegas. He missed Elvis's last show.
He missed Elvis.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is strange. You know, in terms of sort of we're getting close to end of the show here. What do you think the legacy of this last show? What does it mean to Indianapolis? Matt, I'll start with you, and then I'm going to give Zach the last word.
I think it's a significant moment in the city's cultural history. Mm-hmm. I think when you look at who Elvis was, especially when you think of the fact that in the 70s, he was known for his live performances. That's what he did. That he kind of survived that last tour, that last 10-12 date tour. I mean, if you read through it, mm-hmm. it's kind of a survival process to get to the end. And I think it's I know that everyone's not the Elvis fan that you and I are, but it doesn't think it's the biggest moment in the city's history. But I do think it's, you know, it's more than a quirk. It's a significant thing that happened here, and I think it's worth remembering.
Real quick, like
he stole all my words. So, but yeah, I agree with him in the fact that even if you're not an Elvis fan, it's a significant historical event for the city.
Matt Tully, Zach Duncan, thank you very much for joining us. To all of you, thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Cedric Freeman. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.